Hi, this is Jen. It's Friday, February 20th, and I'm reading today's edition of the Attleboro Sun Chronicle for Talking Information Center. Developer seeks tax break. Request comes for a plan that calls for 141 market-rate apartments on City's Union Street. A developer is asking the city for an estimated $4.7 million tax break for a proposed five-story apartment complex at the former site of Composite Modules, a long-standing electronics manufacturer at 61 Union Street. According to the developer's request, the vacant early 1900s-era factory building would be raised, making way for 141 market-rate units on the 80,517-square-foot parcel at the corner of Mill and Union Streets and approximately 143 parking spaces at an adjacent 55,555-square-foot parcel. The project, being proposed by Black Diamond Real Estate Advisors of Hingham, is expected to cost around $50 million. The proposed tax break comes about 7 months after the City Council rejected a $1.4 million tax break for Paragon Development at 41 South Main Street. It was the second tax break Paragon had asked for, the first having been granted in September 2022 for Briggs Crossing, a 46-unit complex at the site of the former Briggs Hotel, adjacent to the empty lot at 41 South Main Street. The company's second request was rejected as several councilors, as well as a number of residents and downtown business owners, complained about the lack of parking for the project, given the city already struggles to provide enough parking for downtown businesses and residents alike. But other councilors had wanted to see the project come to fruition due to the added revenue it would have brought the city despite the tax break. Among them was Council President Todd Kobus, who spoke in support of tax break for the Union Street proposal as well. The tax break comes in the form of a tax increment exemption, also referred to as a TIE, which provides tax relief on a percentage of the new value a project creates over a set number of years in exchange for a development of market rate residential units. The TIE for this project would span 20 years and would provide relief on 4.7 of the project. With the TIE, the new development would generate an extra $3.7 million over the course of the 20 years, according to the proposal. If the development does not pass and the vacant Composite Modules building remains, the city will generate only $291,000 per year. If the developers were to develop without the help of a TIE, the city would see an extra $8.5 million. But Economic Development Director Chris McDermott said the project almost certainly would not go forward without the TIE due to supply chain issues, increased costs of building materials, and the hefty cost of raising the existing structure. Koba said the apartments will all be market rate because it is a requirement to qualify for a grant from the state's Housing Development Incentive Program, which supports developments in gateway cities. The developers, in their request to the city, said they are hoping to receive funding from the program in addition to the tax break in order to make the project viable. But, he said, the developer has been involved with past affordable and workforce housing projects in the city, including the nearby Union Mills 37. A public hearing on the tax break will be held March 3rd. It will then go to the Finance Committee for deliberation with a recommendation to the full council for a final vote. Heroes at the Ice Rink. When a shooter opened fire, three bystanders jumped into action. Sitting in the stands at a hockey game, Michael Black heard what he thought was popping balloons before quickly realizing it was gunfire. As dozens of people rushed out of the Rhode Island arena, Black told his wife to run, run, and then lunged toward the shooter's handgun. Black managed to get his left hand caught in the chamber of Robert Dorgan's gun, jamming it, and then briefly attempted to hold Dorgan down. But Dorgan, a former bodybuilder, hoisted Black into the air before at least two other bystanders rushed over to subdue the shooter. One of them could be seen on video putting Dorgan into a chokehold. Dorgan fell to the ground with the 58-year-old Black on top of him. The shooter died from a self-inflicted gunshot after pulling out a second gun as the two locked eyes. Black never heard Dorgan say a word. The first thought was the safety of my wife, and the second thought was, because the bullets were coming out, was to focus in on the gun, said Black, who ran a printing company until he retired in 2021 and has no specialized emergency response training. Get the gun and then subdue the shooter. Pawtucket police have said the shooter behind the deadly ice rink tragedy on Monday was Robert Dorgan, who also went by Roberta Esposito and Roberta Dorgano. Dorgan's ex-wife, Rhonda Dorgan, and adult son, Aiden Dorgan, were killed in the shooting, and three others were injured. Rhonda Dorgan's parents, Linda and Gerald Dorgan, and a family friend, Thomas Geruso, all of whom remained in critical condition Wednesday. Courageous citizens. Along with Black, Robert Rattini and Ryan Cordero are being credited as subduing the suspect. Separately, Chris Librizzi and Glenn Naradawi, both retired Rhode Island firefighters and EMTs, and nurse Marianne Rattini provided first aid in the immediate aftermath. Pawtucket police say this group of courageous citizens who rushed to intervene in the attack undoubtedly prevented further injury and increased the chances of survival for the injured. I look at it as being fortunate, saddened tremendously in the loss, but fortunate that a small group of people can make a difference, Black said in a Zoom interview Thursday from South Carolina, where he was on a college visit with his son. One of the more puzzling, unsolved questions surrounding the ice rink shooting is over why Dorgan chose the Dennis M. Lynch Arena. It was a familiar spot for Dorgan's family, with Aiden Dorgan, 23, playing hockey and had once hoped to be recruited by a college hockey team. He'd shown up Monday to watch his little brother's hockey match with his mom, grandparents, and other family. Dorgan had also been known to frequent the arena to watch family matches. On Monday, Amanda Wallace Hubbard, Aiden Dorgan's sister and stepdaughter to Rhonda Dorgan, was in the stands. She has since credited Black as the reason she's still alive, and since she was likely next in line to have been shot. Black also said a detective reached out to him Tuesday to say that one of Dorgan's daughters wanted to thank him for his efforts. Authorities have not directly said that Dorgan was transgender and have said questions around Dorgan's gender identity are not relevant to their investigation surrounding the case. However, court records from Dorgan's past show that gender identity was at least one of the contributing factors to Dorgan's wife filing for divorce in 2020 after nearly 30 years of marriage. Dorgan's ex account mentions being transgender and sharing far-right ideologies. With Dorgan dead, other bystanders rushed to provide treatment for the five people who had been shot and were lying between the bleachers. Blood was everywhere. Police arrived within minutes, and Black, with his injured hand, was escorted outside in the parking lot where he reunited with his wife. My wife saw me, and she ran underneath the yellow tape, kind of grabbed me from behind, and we gave a big hug, Black said. She said, I heard you helped with the shooter. And she says, what's all the blood? I said, I got my hand caught in the gun. And then she said, honey, I don't know whether I should be proud of you, but I'm pissed off at you for putting yourself in that situation. As he was sitting in the hospital getting treatment on his injured hand, Black recalled a nurse calling him a hero, a label that has repeatedly been applied to all three bystanders in recent days. I said, I don't feel like I'm a hero right now, Black said. I looked up and I was feeling for the family, so I started getting some tears in my eyes, and then she got tears in her eyes too. It was just a moment of decompression at that point. Black said after the shooting, he initially canceled plans to take his son on a college visit to South Carolina before reconsidering and going ahead with the trip. About an hour and a half later, as I was decompressing a little bit, I was on my couch, the TV, and I had my chocolate lab next to me, and I started thinking that I'm not going to allow this shooter to change my life, he said. I'm not going to allow him to start, you know, dictating or making me afraid. North ballot shaping up. April town election will feature school board race. The April 7th annual town election will feature a four-way race for two seats on the school committee. The candidates for the three-year terms are committee member Sarah Stone, Catherine Cloutier, Francisco Palmerin, and John McAdam. The other school board seat expiring is held by Gideon Godet, a former local school administrator who chose not to run for re-election. Those facing no challengers in the election are incumbents Tom DeFiore and John Rupert for two seats on the Park Commission and Donald Cerrone for another term on the Public Works Board. All are three-year terms. No one is officially running for a three-year seat on the Electric Commission, and that office can be filled by a write-in candidate. Greg Ellis is the incumbent but didn't pull papers for re-election. He was elected in 2024 for a two-year term. Everyone who pulled nomination papers returned them by Tuesday's deadline, town clerk Patty McNeely said. The election is an off year with the town council elected last spring. 50, 25, and 10 years ago this week. A trip down memory lane to this week, 50 years ago. Alabama governor and presidential candidate George Wallace enjoyed a quick and unexpected stay at the South Attleboro Holiday Inn, the Sun Chronicle reported. Wallace had been campaigning in Fall River but did no stumping in Attleboro. While at the Holiday Inn, Wallace got a quick trim from Michael McShahey of Michael's Hairstylist. The Holiday Inn is located in a plaza that now houses Market Basket and Home Depot. 25 years ago, Kenneth Pickering, the assistant principal at North Attleboro High School and longtime Red Rocketeers basketball coach, announced he was retiring at the end of the school year. A North Attleboro High graduate, Pickering had taught for a year at a junior high in Maryland before returning to teach in North Attleboro. "I'd said I'd never come back to North Attleboro, to that burg in the woods," he told the Sun Chronicle. "Then 1 year later, I came back to teach at the North Attleboro Junior High. It was the best move I'd ever made. North Attleboro is a special place." North Attleboro High principal Wilson Witte and Raymond Bupre Jr., the school's athletic director and football coach, had also announced they would retire at the end of the 2001 school year. Pickering died on September 7, 2011. The North Attleboro High Gym is named in his honor. And 10 years ago, on Sunday of that week, temperatures dipped to a low of minus 10 degrees with a wind chill factor of minus 30. On Tuesday, the mercury climbed to 58 degrees with torrential rain and high winds, a difference of 68 degrees in 48 hours. "It is unusual," National Weather Service meteorologist Kim Buchtrick told the Sun Chronicle. "However, it has been known to happen in the winter." The high winds and heavy rain caused problems, pulling down a power line and triggering a fire in Mansfield while knocking out power in South Attleboro. Learning to speak English, putting a brew into the game. Outfielder looks to become more of a part of the conversation. Perhaps the most memorable moment of the Red Sox champagne celebration after clinching a postseason berth last September came from the usually calm Willier Abreu. Speaking to sud-soaked NESN reporter Jamai Webster, Abreu, who throughout his first three major league seasons did nearly all interviews with a team translator, let loose. "The best experience that I've ever had," Abreu, wearing ski goggles, screamed. "You know, the best experience." The exchange went viral among Red Sox fans in the wake of Boston's walk-off win over the Tigers that night and showed fans a different side of Abreu, the genial yet relatively unflappable 26-year-old. It's a moment Abreu knows was all over the internet and nearly 5 months later looks back at it fondly. "That was a funny moment," Abreu said, laughing at his locker Thursday, "and it's still one of the best experiences of my life." English-speaking Red Sox fans hoping to learn more about Abreu's personality are in luck this season, as the Venezuela native, after years of learning a second language, is doing interviews without the aid of a team translator this spring. For years, Abreu has been conversational in English, a language he first started learning after signing with the Astros as an 18-year-old in 2017, but like many foreign players, has been hesitant to speak English in interviews. Throughout the 2025 season, he occasionally did TV, radio, and print interviews in English, but usually had a team translator standing by. This year, Abreu has challenged himself to take what he has deemed an important next step in his bilingual journey. "I started to get more confidence talking in English, doing interviews in English," he said Thursday. "At the beginning, I did not feel too comfortable talking in English, especially when I had a camera in front of me. I started to feel more comfortable, so that's why I started to do interviews in English." Abreu, who was born in Maracaibo, Venezuela, first started learning the language as a minor leaguer in Houston's system and took classes with that organization before being traded to the Red Sox in the 2022 deadline deal that sent Christian Vasquez to the Astros. By the time he made his major league debut in August 2023, he had a pretty good grasp on a second language and has used both Spanish and English to become a very well-liked teammate throughout three tastes of big league action. "I took a lot of classes there with Houston, but I learned a lot or learned more when I started to talk with my teammates and when I started to ask questions or say, 'How do you say that?' or 'What does that mean?' and all that stuff," Abreu said. "Then I started to learn more. It's been really hard. It has been very difficult to learn because it's a second language. It's not that easy to learn a second language, so it took me time. But I started to get more comfortable." The Red Sox employ two Spanish speakers on their media relations staff in Valoria Benitez, who carries the title of interpreter/manager, and Davison Perez, a Massachusetts native who previously served as the full-time translator, is now a manager in the department. Both staffers are available nearly full-time to Spanish-speaking players to assist with interviews or conversations with teammates, coaches, or club officials. On the current roster, Brian Bello, Dominican Republic, Araldis Chapman, Cuba, Ranger Suarez, Venezuela, and Masataka Yoshida, Japan, often do formal interviews with the help of an interpreter. Wilson Contreras, Venezuela, Carlos Narváez, Venezuela, Johan Oviedo, Cuba, and Sedan Rafaela, Caraco, are among those who speak to reporters in English. The Red Sox, like other teams across sports with players from different countries, urge their players to do what makes them feel comfortable. Manager Alex Cora, who himself had to learn English as a young professional after growing up in Puerto Rico, often takes questions in both English and Spanish before games. His experience has made him appreciate Abreu's. "It's important," Cora said. "Even in the meetings, he understands. He keeps getting better. It's good for his brand," quote-unquote. "Two-time gold glover. People should know who he is and who he is all about. I'm glad he's doing that." Abreu has been an early star in spring training, reporting to Fort Myers in trimmed-down physical form and standing out with hard contact in live batting practice sessions against Boston's top pitchers. As he looks to take a meaningful step forward as a player in 2026, he's also excited by the opportunity to make more connections with Red Sox fans. "When you connect with all the fans and you can express yourself with them, I think they appreciate it a lot," Abreu said. "It means a lot because I can communicate myself better. I can talk with more freedom with everybody." In a matter of weeks, Abreu will leave Red Sox camp to suit up for Team Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. There, he'll represent his country on baseball's biggest stage. Speaking both English and Spanish, he hopes, will inspire other young players on a similar path. KP awaits postseason after winning finale. The King Philip Regional High girls hockey team close out its regular season with a 4-2 win over Sandwich High Thursday at Bourne's Gallo Ice Arena. The Warriors had two goals from Annabelle Curran and one each from Stephanie LeBlanc and Emma Richard. Ella Morgan, Lainey O'Shea, and Richard each had assists. King Phillips heads to the MIAA Division II tournament as the number 5 ranked team. Along the way, remember when memories. Bill Gorman of Attleboro wrote regarding the remember when photos from February 6th and 13th. He said he believes Michael Milton was correct in thinking the February 6th photo showed the Olive Street Bridge. In the late 1960s until the early 1970s, I lived on Ellis Street, which is next to the approach to the bridge on the South Main Street side, so I traveled over the span frequently, he said. It looks awfully familiar to me as the Olive Street Bridge long before the complete rebuild to the nice bridge it is today. He said he also remembers when Atherton's Furniture was on South Main Street in Attleboro with a back door on Railroad Avenue. I worked in Watson's Diner, also on Railroad Avenue, in the 1960s to the early 70s, and remember some of the workers going into the diner for lunch, coffee, and snacks when I was there. Between the diner and Atherton's was the rear parking lot for the Attleboro Sun in the 60s, later the Sun Chronicle. All these things were a long time ago, so thanks for the memories. Making dreams come true. Make-A-Wish Massachusetts and Rhode Island, which grants wishes for children with critical illnesses, recently hosted its fourth annual Wish Community Bowling event at Splitsfield Luxury Lanes Bowling Venue at Patriot Place in Foxborough. Wish recipients and their families, along with Make-A-Wish staff and volunteers, enjoyed bowling, networking, and other fun activities. The 54 families were joined by Slide the Fox, mascot of the New England Revolution, and Chip, mascot for the Rhode Island Football Club, who got involved in many of the activities, including an artwork station. More than $22,000 was raised to support the group's mission. Splitsville Luxury Lanes donated their facility and all bowling for the event, which was free for attendees. Love Story reveals Carolyn Bessette Kennedy's enduring style. Grainy paparazzi shots on social media show her hailing a cab in a black slip dress, walking the streets of New York in an oversized coat, wearing that signature red lipstick. Nearly 3 decades after her death at age 33, Carolyn Bessette Kennedy is back in the spotlight as one of fashion's most powerful style influencers. The new TV series, Love Story, chronicles her relationship with John F. Kennedy Jr., and many fans are watching for the clothes. In an era dominated by conspicuous branding and obvious cosmetic enhancements, Bessette Kennedy's enduring appeal lies in what she did not do. She had no platform, no brand partnerships, no social media presence. She looked so different from the people we see now on Instagram, said Ashley Traer, a 45-year-old attorney in Phoenix who grew up admiring Bessette Kennedy from afar. I think we'll be able to date today's influencers immediately because of their makeup, clothes, even plastic surgery. But Carolyn had an effortlessness that always looks modern and cool. Traer, who first encountered Bessette Kennedy as a teenager flipping through People magazine in rural Lamar, Colorado, dreamed of copying her understated elegance. Middle-aged me is still trying to emulate her, she said. A quiet influencer. Bessette Kennedy rarely gave interviews, communicating with the outside world mostly through her clothes, says Sunita Kumar Nair, who wrote CBK, Carolyn Bessette Kennedy, A Life in Fashion, and consulted on the show. I really got a sense that she was extremely private, and it shows because there's barely any footage of her speaking, Nair said. Yet Bessette Kennedy's influence has proven durable. On TikTok and Instagram, accounts such as at All for Carolyn and at Carolyn Bessette page are devoted to chronicling her wardrobe. Three of her coats and a little black dress are being auctioned off this month at the Fashion Auctioneer. Bessette Kennedy, a former Calvin Klein publicist, married Kennedy in 1996, although her mother-in-law, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, was also famous for her style. She didn't copy Jackie. She had her own voice, Nair said, and it wasn't something that she just deliberately did when she married John, and this is what I loved about Carolyn. She'd actually dress like this almost throughout her life, she said. The couple died in a plane crash in 1999. After sun, winter returns. Warm-up gives way to possible storms Friday, Sunday. The second of three storms forecast this week into the weekend for the region is slated to extend into Saturday, with the third looming for late Sunday and Monday. Friday and Saturday's storm is expected to bring only up to an inch of snow to the Attleboro area, meteorologists said. The storm is predicted to begin late morning Friday and include a mix with sleet and rain and impact the evening commute. Light snow is only anticipated Saturday. The storm at the tail end of the weekend into Monday could bring significant snow or steer clear far enough off the coast of southern New England to pose no major problems, forecasters say. Wednesday's storm turned out to be more minor than the 1 to 2 inches of snow forecast, with little snow and mostly rain. Thursday offered a reprieve from the stormy week and weekend with sunny skies and mild seasonable temperatures hovering around 40, and was the best day of the week weatherwise. After highs again near 40 Friday and lows in the mid-20s overnight, the thermometer is slated Saturday to rise to the mid-30s before dropping again to the mid-20s. Sunday should see highs in the upper 30s and lows in the low 20s. The early morning temperatures will make roadways slick following the snowmelt expected during daytime, drivers are warned. Today in history. On February 20, 1962, astronaut John Glenn became the first American to orbit the Earth, circling the globe three times aboard Project Mercury's Friendship 7 spacecraft in a flight lasting 4 hours and 55 minutes before splashing down safely in the Atlantic Ocean. And in 1998, American Tara Lipinski, age 15, became the youngest ever Olympic figure skating gold medalist when she won the ladies' title at the Nagano Olympic Winter Games. American teammate Michelle Kwan took silver.